This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Around the corner, ducks down, Ian Book, and we are all tied at 20.
Looney back to Hub for three.
Got it again!
That's a Big Ten Tournament Championship winner!
From 96.1 WSBT.
The Virginia Cavaliers are the national champions.
Here's Yohe with a steal, gives it up, and Johnson throws it down.
Fires, it's caught, touchdown, T.Y. Hilton.
The sports leader.
Jeffrey! Allow myself to introduce myself.
Here are your hosts, Sean Stiers and Eric Hansen.
Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on a Thursday. Glad to have you with us on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, and the Sports Beat app. Darren Pritchett is, I would assume he's on a bus somewhere heading toward Columbus, Ohio, getting ready for some Notre Dame hockey tomorrow. He will be back with us tomorrow, though, for a little bit anyway.
That sounds wonderful. I thought maybe he'd take an Uber, but I'm glad to hear that he's on a bus.
Yeah, that's right. He has not taken an Uber. He is heading over with Notre Dame hockey at a big matchup with the Buckeyes this weekend in Columbus, Ohio. He is Eric Hansen from the South Bend Tribune and IndyInsider.com. I'm Sean Stiers. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat is brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. By the Food Bank of Northern Indiana, hunger's a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. And by Lechleitner Doors Sales and Service at Lechleitner, they open all the right doors. We have a lot going on over the course of today's show. We've got some Notre Dame football conversation, from controversy to maybe what things could look like for Ian Book in his fifth year at Notre Dame. Carter Carls, another South Bend Tribuneite, will bring us the Notre Dame football recruiting update at 5:30 this hour. We've got the My Five question of the day later this hour. And Tom Noy in to talk a little Notre Dame basketball with us the second hour. He had an IndyInsider.com chat today. And just going through the questions, I'm guessing it was at least a good 2 hours worth of questions again today. Over, under, might even have been pushing 2.5 hours based on the number of questions that he had. How long do your chats usually last, Eric?
I can only have them go 3 hours because we have to get the transcript in the next day. I edit the whole document online, and then I have to pick out the best of. So I can't go longer. There was one time I said, you know what, I'm just going to go until the questions end, and I just can't. There's some weeks that are heavier than others. I've never made it through the entire question pile, but there's been times where I've had maybe 10 questions left. There's been times where I've had 200 questions left. So I could be there quite a while. Either that or I have to get faster as a typist, which I think I'm pretty quick with that. The brain works slow, but the fingers work
the
fast.
Fast fingers. That's right. Did you take typing in high school?
I did, and my typing teacher was Mrs. Burke, and she was amazing. I went from 0 to 60 pretty fast.
Really?
She was an incredible teacher.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds funny to say a typing teacher was very impactful, but she was. I mean, I don't know what she did particularly well, but I know that I went from being able to do nothing to being able to type without looking at my fingers and do it at a fast rate.
And that's funny when you first start doing that, the fact that you can, your hands and fingers actually know, kind of like a piano maybe, I guess, but it's like they know what they're doing without even having to look.
It is. It's funny because I can type without looking at my fingers, but if you gave me a blank keyboard, I couldn't get probably half the letters in the right spot.
Yeah.
Q-U-E-R-T, and that's about it.
Well, and I took it, too, and at the time I'm kind of thinking, typing, am I ever really going to need this? As it turned out, even in radio, I do need it.
How old are you?
52.
Okay. So I'm 59, and so
I was going to ask.
It was further into the future with computers and stuff.
But, uh-huh.
I mean, when I was in college taking journalism classes, all the stuff was on the typewriter. I had erasable typing paper.
Did you still have manual with the ribbon and all that kind of stuff?
I did, yes. Yeah. And then we had just gotten computers at the paper I was working at, Columbus Citizen Journal, and the school paper, but they were really primitive.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I used the typewriter. Mrs. Burke, wherever you are, thank you.
Friend of mine who does what you do, we were roommates in college, he does the hunt peck, the two fingers, and he still, to this day, never actually learned to type, but he can hammer it out just with two fingers. But it's interesting to watch because I'm surprised that keyboards stay intact just the way he attacks those keys sometimes.
The one thing that I have to dock Mrs. Burke on is she called me Earl. She never learned my correct name. I just finally just
not
started
Eric.
Answering to
Earl.
Him. Yeah, yeah.
His name is Earl.
Yeah, the first few days of class, Earl? And then, oh, that's me. Yep, I'm here.
And you never corrected her, huh?
Well, I said my name's Eric. I thought maybe she just couldn't say those letters, but tell you what, great teacher.
You just look like an Earl, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. Yep, Earl's here.
All right, so again, Tom Noyle joined us in the second hour. We'll get plenty of Notre Dame basketball conversation, but we should mention, of course, the Irish defeated Georgia Tech 78-74 last night. They get their second win in the ACC. They improved to 11-6 overall. Big night for Prentice Hubb, leading four Irish players in double figures with 25 points. He went 8 out of 16 from the field, 3 of 8 from three-point range, and 6 out of 8 from the free throw line, including 5 for 6 in the last 25 seconds to seal Notre Dame's second conference victory of the season. And then John Mooney, with his 11th straight double-double, he ties Luke Herangode for the most consecutive double-doubles in Notre Dame program history. And I think the most important thing is just the fact that Notre Dame was able to pick up a victory after all these close games, and it was kind of shaping up that way. Again, they had what looked like maybe a little bit of a comfortable lead, and then Georgia Tech called a timeout. They came right back, and it went back and forth throughout most of the second half, and in the end, Notre Dame is able to pull out a road victory in the Atlantic Coast Conference. So they've got to be feeling pretty good about that.
Yeah, what do you make of Notre Dame? I thought it was interesting yesterday. There was a analyst from ACC country that's pretty well known, West Durham, that did a power rankings of the ACC and had Notre Dame 15th. And this was before the game last night. And Tom Noy was like, I don't think so. What do you think? How do you think it's going to end up for Notre Dame? Do you think they're going to be middle of the pack? Do you think they're going to be bottom of the pack? North Carolina is in last place right
now. I know. And that, of course, is one of their losses. And that's kind of why going...
Yeah, they were upset by North Carolina.
Yeah, that's right. But, I mean, going into the season, I kind of felt like it was better to play if they were going to do this. Like, would you rather play North Carolina right out of the gate as good as they were last year and as bad as Notre Dame was last year, or would you rather wait to see them until the middle of January after they've had some time together? I kind of thought that maybe Notre Dame was better off because everyone was trying to figure some things out, and you felt like, hey, maybe this isn't so bad when they drop a close game. Yeah. But then when you see what North Carolina has become, you know, if I put on the rose-colored glasses,
okay,
and you look at some of these close games, you can say, well, if they can just get over the hump like they did last night, maybe they can finish in the middle of the pack. And certainly it's still out there for them, but I just the lack of numbers they have, the lack of kind of that Prentice Hubb, you know, he was sort of the go-to guy in crunch time last night. He figured some things out that hasn't always been there. If they could have that consistently, if they could have someone who could drive a little bit more, score off the dribble a little bit more, I think that would help them. But I don't think that's magically going to appear right in this season. And just the close losses that they've had this year is somewhat a recurring theme from last year, and the cast of characters is all the same. So I don't know that they could be high middle of the pack, but I think that, you know, maybe lower middle of the pack, maybe lower third, but I certainly don't think that I would put them at 15th right now. They've at least shown some signs that maybe they're close to turning a corner with what they did, being close against NC State, being close against Louisville. Close isn't going to do anybody any good at the end of the season, but I do think that they can at least be sort of in that upper part of the lower third of the conference based on how things go.
And I need to correct myself. Wake Forest is a half a game behind North Carolina. North Carolina is 1-4. Wake is 1-5. But just to see North Carolina that far down in the standings is, I mean, five or six games into it that people have played is a shocker.
Yeah. And that's when Darren and I talked, I guess, would that have been, I think it was Monday. My days are kind of all jumbled together now after being out sick for the last couple of days. But after that that would have been last week, actually, where they had the chance to beat NC State. I think that one's where we were having this conversation, where you're on the road. You've only had one at that point before the Louisville game. You had only had one home game in the conference. So you'd been on the road. You'd already won at Syracuse. You had a chance to win at NC State. And I think that could be a pretty pivotal game down the stretch, just when you look at, you know, what games should you win, which games would be an upset if you pull them off. I think if they had pulled that one out, that it not that it was going to drastically swing everything, but I think by the time the end of the season rolls around, that it could be pretty pivotal, that the chance to pick up a road win like that, especially when you had a ranked Louisville team coming in. They played Louisville tough, but things just didn't quite break their way down the stretch in either of those games. But again, it did last night, and so now they are 2-4 in the conference, 11-6 overall, and we'll see how it breaks over this last month and a half of the season. They've still got a lot of basketball to play, and of course we've got the Mike Bray Show coming up tonight, 7 o'clock here with Jack Nolan on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. This has been, Eric, kind of a week of controversy, I think, when you kind of look all over the place. It's been one of the more controversial weeks in recent sports memory, I think, from the sign-stealing scandals going on down at Houston that saw A.J. Hinch, Jeff Luhnow, and Alex Cora all get fired. Now Carlos Beltran gets fired before, you know, he even gets to take the New York Mets to spring training, and you've got an alleged niece of Beltran's pointing fingers at two Astros players, and then you've got Jessica Mendoza from ESPN saying some things that I think she already, you know, realized that she should have probably not said to begin with. And then, of course, all the stuff going on with LSU as well, from Joe Burrow and his teammates getting in trouble for smoking cigars after the championship game, to Odell Beckham Jr. with, you know, giving players cash and
spanking a police officer and getting charged with assault. They were going to charge him with sexual assault at first, and now it's
I didn't see the sexual assault.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it was.
Like I said, it's been a crazy week, and we can talk about some of this. And then today, longtime agent Drew Rosenhaus even fired wide receiver Antonio Brown as his client. They have broken up, so.
Wow, that's interesting. You fire your client.
That's right. So throw that one into the mix.
It's like blocking somebody on Twitter.
That's right. It kind of is, isn't it? But as far as we're concerned around here at Notre Dame, maybe the biggest controversy happened with Notre Dame's offensive coordinator opening this week. It's been pretty polarizing, whether it's fans or media who cover the team. I don't know if I can remember a subject that's kind of polarized as everyone as much as this.
Jeff Quinn's hiring.
Jeff Quinn. Well, maybe that's true.
Strangely, not Brian Van Gorder's hiring.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
No one was polarized back then. They just went, who?
Yeah.
And then they figured it all out. Then it didn't take long. But, I mean, Brian Kelly says it one way, and then he said something else, not necessarily backtracking, reversing course. I think a lot of people have been confused by it, dismayed. Some even got downright angry, resorted to name calling, and I mean, don't even mention Twitter and all the stuff that's gone on there. But in the end, Eric, I think cooler heads have prevailed, and I think we finally have something we can all agree on. When it comes to Notre Dame's new offensive coordinator, we can all 100%, without a doubt, we can absolutely say with certainty the name of Notre Dame's offensive coordinator is Tommy.
Correct.
Tommy.
Right.
And we know it for a fact. Some said Tom, some said Tommy. The source has spoken. Tommy Rees yesterday tweeted one word and made it official. Pretty simple. Tommy.
Right.
Now we know.
Now we know.
It is Tommy, not Tom Rees, who is Notre Dame's offensive coordinator. So we can put all that to rest.
Well, and if he gets off to a slow start, he'll be called something other than Tommy by the fans.
But you're right about that.
But, you know, the thing about the hiring of Tommy Rees is that there's a few things that people get hung up on. One is that he's 27 mm-hmm. and he hasn't done called plays other than the Iowa State game. Two, they think of the Tommy Rees that played quarterback right. and they equate his ceiling as a quarterback to his ceiling as an offensive coordinator. And three, they think about Brian Kelly's reboot in 2016 where Paul Longo and Brian Van Gorder were purged, and they were guys that he had a long history of working with, more so with Longo, less with Van Gorder. They did have a history together. They had always wanted to kind of get back together. And so people say, well, this is him hiring his cronies, his buddies, however you want to say it. And so if the exact same skill set was coming in from the outside, and I think people would have warmed up to it a lot more. But I keep coming back to this. Everybody that I've talked to, including Brady Quinn earlier today, who has spent time with Tommy Rees and seen his coaching, have insight. I can't find anybody yet that would say this is a mistake.
And
even close to that. I mean, it's not even been neutral.
And it's interesting. Back when Tommy Rees was still playing at Notre Dame, when his teammates would go on the coach's show,
and I
know Jack would always ask, which of your teammates will be a coach one day? And they all said Tommy Rees.
Yeah.
You know, so I think this has been something that's been shaping up for a long time. And I guess one of my questions is, what if Tommy Rees had gone to Oregon or wherever else, right. and they're tearing it up
right.
with next season? Then what does everybody think about this? The
right.
fact of the matter is, we're not going to know
right.
until we see it, exactly what it looks like. But for everyone to be passing judgment because all of the things that you're talking about, I think we need to pump the brakes, because, as you said, right. everyone that you talk to that actually knows the guy and has sit and spent some time with the guy and knows what his actual football acumen is, they're all pretty excited about this.
I would agree. And so, again, you know, there are people that surprise you. There are people where you kind of know walking in the door that maybe this isn't a good fit. And fit is such an important part that people dismiss, and especially fit at Notre Dame. It's one thing to fit with your fellow coaches, and it's another to get what Notre Dame's about. And Brady Quinn spoke to that pretty well today about the value of fit. And we talked about Joe Moorhead a little bit, who was one of the names from the outside that was, seemed like a reality that could happen. Now he's going to Oregon.
Right.
And what the pluses and the minuses with that would be. But we'll find out next year, and next year is an important year. If you're Brian Kelly, you know that the 2020 roster potentially will be your best. And maybe there will be better rosters after that. Maybe there won't. But there's a window of opportunity for Notre Dame to get back into the national championship conversation next year. And you're not going to say, well, you know what? I want to go swimming with my family in Bermuda, so let's just hire Tommy because it's the easy choice.
Uh-huh.
Or I want somebody that's not going to talk back to me. See, that's not going to happen with Tommy. When he was a player, I mean, you would see, Brian Kelly turning purple, and Tommy handled it very well. And there were times the way Tommy handled it was yelling back.
Was yelling back, exactly.
Yeah. So, again, it's difficult until they actually get into it. You see them under pressure. You see them perform. But my initial reaction to the move, to the fact that he was the front runner, was I was hesitant, and the more I learned, the more I liked the move. And so that's where I sit. I'm open-minded that this is going to work, and I expect it to work.
I think it will as well. But again, we will all sort of find out at Wimbledon.
We'll all find out together.
That's right. We'll get some glimpses this spring, and spring practice isn't too far away, so we'll get to see some of that and what it looks like. One thing that kind of obviously all rolls into this is you've got Ian Book coming back for his fifth year, and it's not just his fifth year. Like, you look at Joe Burrow down at LSU. He was a grad student this year, and now obviously, you know, he had the big surge, wins a Heisman, 60 touchdown passes, helps LSU win a national championship. But a lot of it gets attributed to the passing game coordinator, Joe Brady, who it didn't take him long. He moved right on back to the NFL, to the Carolina Panthers from LSU this week.
LSU lost its defensive coordinator today, too.
Yeah, so. I mean, Eddie the spoils O. of success, right?
And Joe Burrow. Eddie right. O's going to have to reinvent himself again.
That's right. But how much of that success can also maybe be attributed to the fact that here is a grad student, and, you know, there was, I guess, kind of a lot made of the fact that he was doing his grad work, taking online courses. He didn't have to devote a whole lot of time to actually being in the classroom and a lot of that stuff. So when you think about that, and Ian Book, could maybe he see a spike in play this year as a graduate student? Could he have, you know, more time like Joe Burrow to devote to the actual football stuff?
Well, let's start with that second part of the question right there, is could he have more time? There is flexibility in terms of grad students, how heavy they want to make their schedule. And in general, the choices lately of a lot of Notre Dame's fifth-year students has been leaning toward having a lighter schedule, and then you would have more time for recovery, you'd have more time for film study outside the 20 hours that are structured for you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are exceptions. Cody Riggs came from Florida and got an MBA in a year.
Wow.
Chris Stewart was in law school when he was a fifth-year senior. Now, that's been longer ago. I mean, we're talking finishing up in the early Brian Kelly, part of the Brian Kelly era. But he certainly has that choice. There's not a requirement that you've got to take 15 credit hours of whatever you're
right
towards your master's degree. So he can certainly focus on football. So that's an option, and I would imagine that he's probably going to take that. Take the lighter road academically.
By the way, I saw the fan. Was that an email sent to Tyler James a week or so ago?
Yeah.
Outraged that Ian Book is using his fifth year. How dare he use his fifth year? College is a four-year program. You should be gone after 4 years, and everything is Ian's fault for staying an extra
year.
Well,
and it's interesting, too, because Ian is a third-year starter now. When you look at the national champions in the past decade, there've been a lot of first-year starters winning it, and some, including last night or earlier this week, a second-year starter in Joe Burrow winning it. And a lot of that is because there aren't third-year starters very much anymore. If you're that good, you're going to go to the league early. You know, DeShone Kizer certainly could have been a third-year and a fourth-year starter. He gave up 2 years of eligibility to enter the draft. The last third-year starter for Notre Dame was Jimmy Clausen, and Jimmy and Brady were the last two, and those guys were the most successful third-year starters statistically in Notre Dame history. Again, in talking to Brady today, you know, he made a huge jump. He went from a kind of a top 50 guy to a top 10 guy. Clausen did the same thing. It was that dramatic from year two to year three. But football's a little bit different now, too. It was so much more on the quarterback's shoulder. Now the offense is easier for first and second year guys to master. So I don't know what it's going to look like for Ian Book, but I think the relationship between Reese and Book gives Ian Book a chance to be the best Ian Book can be. That's one of the reasons why I like, I've come to like this move with Tommy Rees, is that the offensive play caller is always a very important component in how good your quarterback's going to be. And so I like his chances now. How high can he climb? How much better can he get? You know, that's, we got to look at a little bit at spring football and see evidence of where that's going. Yeah.
But I, the relationship aspect that you mentioned, I don't think can be overlooked at right. all, because so much of it now at every level of coaching is about the kind of, whether it's baseball, football, basketball, wherever it happens to be, is about the relationships.
Right.
These guys, just look at the trend. I mean, I think you can look at both the NFL as an example, and even college, like a guy like Lincoln Riley. Dabo Swinney's not that old, but I mean, in the NFL with the McVays, McDermotts, LaFleurs, all these different guys, younger guys, and it's about the kind of relationships they can establish with the guys who are working for them.
Yeah, I, so...
And I don't apply it necessarily working for them
right.
to college, but I was obviously talking more about the pro guys, but for the relationships that they're forging with the players.
I thought it was also interesting, the Twitter reaction from current and former players to Rees getting the promotion. You know, I mentioned this, Tyler and I were talking earlier today, Tyler James, and I said, you know, it's one thing for Zach Martin to endorse it, because Zach and Tommy were fast friends when they were in college. You go over to Buffalo Wild Wings here on Grape Road, and it would be Tyler Eifert, Tommy, and Zach. I'd see them whenever I went up to pick up wings. I'd see those three there. But for Mike McGlinchey, who doesn't really have a dog in that fight, to kind of go out, or for Brady Quinn, for Quentin Nelson, then you start to say, okay, well, wait a second here. These guys could just be quiet, silent. They don't have to say something bad, but they could just not tweet.
Just not say anything at all.
And usually when Quentin Nelson says something, it's pretty profound or it's a grunt. You know, it's one of the two. So,
and he did more than grunt on Twitter.
Yeah. So I'm really eager to see how this plays out. And I'm very open-minded, again, that it could work out well.
All right. Eric Hansen's thoughts on Tommy Rees. Again, Tommy. Not Tom.
I've been calling him Tommy. In my column the other day, I called him Tommy/Tom just because the press release said Tom.
Right.
But I've been calling him Tommy, and we'll continue to call him Tommy.
Well, and that's what we were told up front when he got hired, that it was Tom. Uh-huh. But apparently there's been some conflicting stuff even with him, as far as like the Twitter account still said Tommy. The business card said Tom, but other official things that he had
said
Tommy.
But he came out and he said Tommy, and Tommy. They even used... They added a graphic where they added an
That's
MY.
That's right. They
to
added
it.
The MY. Perfect. All right, we'll take a timeout. We're a little bit behind, but when we come back, we will hear our latest IndyInsider.com recruiting update with Carter Carls from the South Bend Tribune. With Eric Hansen, Sean Stiers, Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT, the Sports Leader, and the Sports Beat app. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat continues on 96.1 WSBT, the Sports Leader, along with Eric Hansen of the South Bend Tribune and IndyInsider.com, Sean Stiers, and joined right now by recruiting man extraordinaire Carter Carls of the South Bend Tribune and IndyInsider.com. How are you doing on this Thursday, Carter?
I am doing great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for being here, as always. I guess let's start with this. The contact period began today as far as the recruiting calendar goes. So what does that mean as far as Notre Dame football recruiting?
Yeah, so they just finished up the dead period on the recruiting calendar, which kind of prohibits coaches from really doing anything off campus related as far as recruiting goes. So now they're able to visit schools, go to basketball games, watch kids work out, all off campus. And so starting today, you're seeing assistant coaches Brian Kelly go to schools across the nation to, you know, try to rev up interest and get these kids to visit Notre Dame. So that will be kind of the next couple of weeks. And on February 1st, they're going to have a junior day. They've already got a handful of guys lined up that they're going to have visit then. And Cameron Martinez, kind of the guy to watch in the 2020 class, he told me that Brian Polian, special teams coordinator at Notre Dame, is planning on going to his basketball game tonight. Run game coordinator Lance Taylor, he's in North Carolina today, visiting a four-star running back, Will Shipley, out of the 2021 class. So a lot of action in day one of the contact period, and that should be an eventful couple weeks.
Okay, Carter, you mentioned Cameron Martinez, and I know that he is pretty good on both sides of the ball. If he comes to Notre Dame, where do you think they'll try him out first, and what do you think Notre Dame's chances are of actually landing him?
I think they first try him out on defense. Safety is kind of the position that has been talked about the most. But with him, what he told me is Notre Dame's letting him decide. So if offense is what he wants to do, he can do that. Now, we'll see how that shakes out exactly. I'm sure maybe that will be his initial choice, but then maybe later on, that might be a decision that's really up to Brian Kelly. But Cameron Martinez, when he was given the choice at Ohio State to choose his position, he was picked to he chose safety. So it probably varies school to school for him. A lot of I would say the majority of schools liked him at wide receiver. But he liked safety at Ohio State. A lot of that had to do with the relationship he had with Jeff Hafley, the co-defensive coordinator there that left for the head coaching job, Boston College. And his departure is really the reason why he did not sign with Ohio State in the early signing period and is kind of holding off on that. He's still committed to the Buckeyes, but he kind of wants to see who they're going to hire to replace Jeff Hafley. You know, to me, it would seem like Ohio State would really need to mess up that hire for that to not work. But with Notre Dame, I don't know about how great their chances are just because they kind of got on them late. I mean, they offered them last May a scholarship, and they had some initial interest, but they were kind of late on the scene and didn't really gain much traction initially. I mean, Cameron Martinez went on an official visit the next month to Ohio State, took three official visits. None of them were to Notre Dame, and then he eventually picked Ohio State. He hasn't visited Notre Dame since November of 2018. So it's hard for me to believe that this two or three-week stretch they'll be able to do it, but I don't know. We'll see. So anything can happen. I think the key really is getting him on campus February 1st. I see no way they land him if they don't get him on campus February 1st. And so that's the main goal, and that's what Brian Pullen will try to do when he's at his game tonight, is convince him to go on campus February 1st.
Carter Curls from the South Bend Tribune and IndyInsider.com. You can read all his recruiting updates there. Carter, who's maybe any other big names that Notre Dame plans to visit out on the recruiting trail this week?
Yeah, I kind of want to talk about Will Shipley a little bit, just because I've alluded to this before, but Lance Taylor's really stood out to me this past year that he's been at Notre Dame as a recruiter. He played a pretty big hand in getting Chris Tyree out of the 2020 class, but he's already swinging big and doing a really good job in the 2021 class. We talk about guys like Will Shipley, Donovan Edwards, Kamar Wheaton. He's going after top 50 overall players this class at the running back position. And he seems to be doing really well with those kids that I've been talking to. Will Shipley's been on campus already a couple times, and I could see him visiting again this spring. Wouldn't be a big surprise to me if Will Shipley ended up at Notre Dame, and that's a running back that is arguably just as good, if not better, than Chris Tyree. So gets a lot of Christian McCaffrey comparisons. He's out of North Carolina. So I don't know. I think if he were able to get Chris Tyree in the 2020 class and then Will Shipley in 2021, and I'm not convinced that they're only going to get one running back this class. I think there's a good probability that they get two. So if he were to get Chris Tyree, Will Shipley, and then another top 100 overall guy, and that looks to be possible, you know, I mean, Lance Taylor might be cementing himself as the best recruiter on this staff, or maybe a top two recruiter behind Mike Elston. I mean, he would be in that conversation to me. So really good start for Lance Taylor, and we'll see if he'll be able to close on these guys come spring and the fall.
Carter, you know, with Phil Jakovic going to Boston College, Brendan Clark, I would imagine, would start the spring at number two unless Drew Pine was really great in the weight room and, you know, I don't know, threw weights around well. But we obviously expect him to compete for the backup job as well. You've really gotten to know both those kids, know their skill sets pretty well. How does Drew Pine compare to Brendan Clark when you're looking at a potential backup quarterback for 2020?
Well, Drew is probably the most polarizing kid in this 2020 class because Rivals, I was looking today, Rivals has as a number 118th best player in the class. Four-star guy. Regardless of position. 247 has him at number 740. And they keep dropping him. I mean, it's every day. It's like 10 more spots. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he's in the 800s by the time it's all said and done. They just seem to keep dropping him. So I've tried to look at him a little more closely, talk with people around him just to kind of get a sense of him. And I've seen him play in person at the opening finals in Dallas in July. So what I thought was, I think this is someone who's probably more of a three-star kid, but he's fascinating because he's got these physical limitations. He's not the biggest kid at all. He will have the weakest arm on the team. He doesn't really wow you physically, but this is someone that won a state championship his freshman year. He's kind of a gamer kind of quarterback. So he always seems to elevate his level of competition when it's not expected. He went to the Under Armour All-American game, and he was the lowest-rated kid there on 247 Sports, and he played better than anyone in that game. And then in the opening finals, he was kind of overshadowed by a lot of guys that played there. He ended up being in the Elite 11, top 11 quarterbacks in that competition. So he's someone that kind of defies the odds sometimes. I just don't believe personally that will happen in a short period of time. I think, hey, maybe he exceeds expectations year one, year two, but to leapfrog Brendan Clark on the depth chart, that would take, I would think, a substantial amount of just the wow factor from you, because Brendan Clark's been on the team for a year. He was the scout team player of the year. He knows the playbook, and he's physically ready. This is someone who's, what, 6'3", 217? He's physically ready for the game, and he's got the tools, and he's got no physical concerns, and then he knows the playbook. Whereas Drew Pine, I think he needs to benefit from being in the weight room and learning the playbook and things of that nature. So Pine, he defies the odds, so maybe down the road you could see something, but as far as this spring, I think it'll be about dedicating himself to the weight room, getting adjusted to the classes, and getting adjusted to the playbook.
Really interesting stuff on Drew Pine right there. The Polynesian Bowl is this weekend. So are there any Notre Dame signees competing out there?
Yeah, so tight end Kevin Bauman, running back Chris Tyree, the offensive lineman, Michael Carmody, and the defensive tackle, Aiden Kiana Aina. The left tackle, Tosh Baker, was supposed to be there, but he got hurt the first day at the All-American Bowl. He's actually getting there today. He won't play in the game. Got an MCL sprain in his knee. It's not considered serious, but I talked to Kevin Bauman last night just to kind of get a sense of what the week's been like. And, you know, these high school all-star games, they don't give you a ton from a competition standpoint. They're pretty relaxed, but he's gotten to kind of know some of the other kids. Aiden Kiana Aina has got some Polynesian in his blood, and he's kind of given them the taste of Hawaii. So I think it's a good experience for him. I also talked to Bauman about the Tommy Reese hiring and what he kind of thought of it. He said he kind of had a feeling that the promotion was coming, but it was definitely news to him when it happened. It wasn't like they were updating the signees and the commits with every possible update about the offensive coordinator hiring. But he's fired up about it, and it seems like a lot of the other signees are fired up about it. We've seen a lot of support from former players, current players, and now from people I've talked to with the signees and the commits. They really like Tommy Reese as far as what he's like as a football mind, and then they really like his just how personable he is with the players. They feel like he can really relate, and so I'll have more on that in my story with Kevin Bauman, but he had a lot of nice things to say about Tommy Reese.
Does he have an opinion or really any thought about who's going to coach him his position next year? Because Notre Dame hasn't hired that person yet.
No, I mean, it's funny. I mean, maybe it's Coach Speak. I mean, it probably is. But to him and Michael Mayer, it really is like, hey, as long as the guy is not a doofus, it's not going to impact me much because because it's the same offense, or it's, you know, it's going to at least be the same principles. They're going to use the tight ends pretty heavily no matter what. That'll be, I mean, maybe Tommy Reese's offense looks different than Chip Long, probably, maybe will, but as far as using the tight ends, that still remains the plan. And a lot of these kids, they commit to Notre Dame for more than just, you know, the positions coach or the scheme. They like the academics, they like the religious aspect, et cetera, et cetera. So to them, you know, one little position coach isn't like this, you know, the end of the world to them.
As long as he's not a doofus.
Yeah, as long as he's not a doofus, right?
Okay.
Last question for you tonight, Carter. Junior Day is coming up at Notre Dame February 1st. Any confirmed visitors for Junior Day?
Well, Justin Walters is kind of the new one that I confirmed last night. He's a three-star safety out of Illinois that Notre Dame's pretty high on. And a lot of 2021 and 2022 guys. Braylon Allen's really the big one out of the 2022 class. I think it's crazy that we're already talking about the 2022 class. But this is kind of around the time when that cycle of recruiting after the sophomore year, that's where that starts to really pick up. I remember Tyler Buckner last year, he committed last March. Greg Crippen committed last March. So this is around the time when those first commits out of the 2022 class come in. And Braylon Allen is one to watch because the only two, you know, Division I Power 5 schools that he's reported has offered him a scholarship were Wisconsin and Iowa. He was expected to make a decision as far as committing to one of those schools. And then Notre Dame entered the mix, and now he's not making a decision. So the fact that they offered him a scholarship and he's going to visit on February 1st, this is around the time when he wanted to announce a commitment. You know, wouldn't be a huge surprise if he were to end up landing at Notre Dame because they have definitely already been a game changer in his recruitment. So we'll see how that plays out February 1st.
All right. Sounds good. Carter Curls, don't be a doofus. No doofus stuff from you tonight. Good.
No doofus.
All right. Carter Curls, you can read all his Notre Dame recruiting updates in the South Bend Tribune and IndyInsider.com. Thanks, Carter. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. Take care. Carter Curls, and we will take a timeout when we come back. Eric's My Five question of the day. We'll get into the five statistical categories Notre Dame must improve in this offseason. That's coming up when we return. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader in the Sports Beat app.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five question of the day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Today's My Five question of the day, the five things, the five statistical categories Eric Hansen says Notre Dame must improve in this offseason. This is the first time I've done the My Five with the fancy new buttons. So here we go.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, this is number five.
I'll tell you, this looks like a typo because of how well Notre Dame's defense played. But they were 129th out of 130 in red zone defense.
Really?
And that means there was one team below them in that ranking. I think they did at times a good job of getting people to kick field goals rather than getting touchdowns in the red zone. But, I mean, they were once people got inside the 20, they were scoring most of the time.
Interesting. You're right about that. I guess I hadn't thought about that. But so red zone defense is number five. All right.
Four. I am going with total offense. Even though Notre Dame set a school record for most points per game at 37 and they were 13th, they're only 43rd in total offense. So a lot of the scoring came from the fact that Notre Dame defense turned the ball over to the offense a lot. They were fourth in takeaways. They were first in fumbles recovered. They were sixth in defensive touchdowns scored. So the offense at being 43rd needs to do a little bit more of the scoring work. When you look at the teams that were in the playoff this year, all four were in the top six in scoring offense and total offense, both.
All right.
Okay. Number three.
Well, this is going to be the one that would be number one with a lot of Notre Dame fans that email me, and that's rushing offense. They were 45th in rushing offense, which actually was a slight improvement over last year. Just didn't feel like it because Notre Dame had to be so creative and unconventional in rushing. But they do need to be a better running team. They need to be able to run in short yardage. They do need to be able to run out the clock. They weren't consistently able to do that this year.
Yeah, also in part based on the degree of difficulty the opponent they faced as well.
Correct.
All right.
Number two is third down efficiency.
Notre Dame this year was 65th, which is the second worst of the Brian Kelly era. The only worse year was 2010, when Tommy Rees was a little freshman quarterback at the end of the year, who had to take over for Dane Crist. And I think part of that was the running game. You know, they were in a lot of third and medium, third and longs, but they were really good in a lot of other categories. That third down efficiency was the thing that they did worst on offense.
My five question of the day, the five statistical categories Eric Hansen says Notre Dame must improve in this offseason. Number five, red zone offense. Red zone defense, rather. Number four, total offense. Number three, rushing offense. Number two, third down efficiency, which leaves us with
number one.
Well, this is one of those predictor categories that teams that do well in this category usually are playing for championships. It's one of their traits, and that's rushing defense. And Notre Dame did not do well in rushing defense. Now, some of that was Louisville and New Mexico gashed them early in the year, and they never kind of made up for that. And then Michigan, the 77th best rushing offense, ran for 303 yards against them. They ended up 60th. They're so much better in all the other defensive categories other than red zone defense.
That is the My Five question of the day on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, and the Sports Beat app. We've got just a few seconds left. Eric, anything coming up in the South Bend Tribune tomorrow that you want to mention before we wrap up?
I will mention it. We have
That's
trying
okay.
to get it up. I wasn't ready. We will have a Notre Dame women's hoop story. We'll have Tom's chat transcript Notre Dame is playing Duke in women's basketball, hockey capsule, and much, much more.
All right. Sounds good. Tom Noe coming in the second hour. We've got plenty of Notre Dame basketball to talk about. Eric Hansen, talk to you tomorrow. WSBT South Bend.
Welcome back to another hour of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Touchdown, Notre Dame! 70 yards, Book to Lindsey.
He gets it out to Leshesky for three.
He got it!
Caught for the win, Kyle Rudolph!
From 96.1 WSBT.
Justin Fisher heading for the touchdown, his sixth of the night.
The Washington Nationals are World Series champions.
And that's a South Bend Cup Midwest League championship winner.
And the kick is good for the win. Pinheiro with the De Niro kick.
The sports leader.
And look who's coming up.
Here are your hosts, Sean Stiers and Tom Noy.
Hour two of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, and the Sports Beat app. Plenty going on in the second hour. A lot of it, most of it, Notre Dame basketball. How are you tonight, Tom Noy?
You have one job this hour, Sean Stiers.
What's that? Do you need you? I'm the point guard tonight, right?
No. Do not, under any circumstance, ask me if Mike Bray's on the hot seat. That's all I had to deal with this week in my chat.
You texted me earlier today and you said,
so just to warn you.
You asked me if Mike Bray is on the hot seat, and I hadn't looked through your chat script yet. My gosh, what do you think? Had to be over a half dozen times it came up.
At least.
In some form or another.
And I get it. I mean, I understand what people are thinking about. But just look through the rest of the chat first before you're asking questions like that. Because it was asked like three times, and then somebody else would be like, is Mike Bray on the hot seat? I just answered that.
Right.
And who knows, what's going to happen at season's end? But any coach, and Mike Bray will be the first coach to say that, any coach that doesn't make it to the NCAA tournament three straight years in a row should be feeling a little uncomfortable, and they'll be the first to tell you. He'll be the last guy to say he's paying attention to anything that anybody might say about his job status because he's not doing this or he's not doing that, because he'll be the first to say, look, I've got to get us back to the NCAA tournament. Like, I'm not happy that we missed this thing 3 years in a row. He said it the last time they went 3 years in a row, and he'll say it again, where it's like he doesn't need people to say Mike Bray's on the hot seat because he's missed the NCAA tournament. He knows going to work.
He knows
every
he's
day.
Missed the NCAA.
Right, like he knows, man. We got to get back to this thing.
Yeah.
It's important for this program, not necessarily to get to a Final Four or get to another Elite Eight, but just to be involved in it. Because there was another question in the chat, at the end of the chat, that said, "What would you rather take this season?
Would you rather have a deep NIT run?
Yeah. Or would you rather win an NIT championship?
Yeah.
Or would you rather go to the NCAA tournament and lose in the first round?" And I said, without question, any team would want to go to the NCAA tournament and lose in the first round, because there is nothing redeeming. I don't care what you say. I don't care if I haven't played college basketball. Nothing. There is nothing in this world that is worse than when everybody's talking about one thing, the NCAA tournament, and you're trying to get ready for a home game to play in the NIT. It's awful.
The only people who talk about the NIT champion are the people who are doing the game on TV that mm-hmm. night, and the fan base of the team that ends up winning, because that's their big consolation prize. At least we won the NIT championship. And it's just nobody talks about it.
Gentlemen's bet right now. I'll give you $5 if you name who won the NIT last year.
Couldn't tell you who won any of the last 100 NITs.
Who knows? Yeah. Like, who cares?
Exactly.
So, weird.
Yeah.
But big win for the Irish.
At least Mike Bray's not a baseball manager at this point, huh?
Ooh. See me?
Might be feeling it a little bit.
See my shoulder? I'm getting a little tap here from.
What? I just. It's. It's unfathomable to see the level to, you know, sign stealing is one thing, but then to see him. The video and the beating the trash can, and then all of a sudden Jose Altuve and Bregman are, or I'll go ahead and say allegedly with some air quotes, They've got buzzers on their shoulders so they can be buzzed to find out what pitch is coming.
Well, that one video of Altuve running on third base, and when he holds his jersey together,
he's pointing inside his shirt.
Don't pull my shirt off because I'm wearing a wire. Yeah. Like, you can't. Between that, and then I never heard the story. I was listening to a podcast the other day. It was so nice out yesterday. I was like, I got to get out and do. I was just doing some yard work. I was raking some leaves, doing some. It was like 40 degrees, beautiful. So I'm listening to this podcast about this whole cheating incident, and I never heard the story about one of those pitchers, Danny Farquhar.
Right, the White Sox guy?
Was he, and that's the White Sox guy that had the brain that almost died in the dugout, right? Apparently there was some situation where he was on the mound when they were playing the Astros, and he stepped off the mound and basically looked at the Astros dugout and said, "Hey, quick. I can hear you."
Yeah.
Like when they were banging or they're doing the signals. I never heard that story. Like, that's totally bizarre. So all these revelations come out, and it's apparently it wasn't that big of a secret. Like, everybody know if the pitcher's standing on a mound saying, "I can hear you banging the trash can. You want to knock it off?"
Well, but still, it's one thing for to think that a guy is like a coach or a player, because there's always that one guy who's really good at stealing signs, who's sitting in the dugout. Like they can figure that stuff out. It's one thing for that guy to be sitting there, and then maybe you're relaying that, but it's another thing when you've got the video cameras and the instant replay cameras and the monitors and everything else doing
it. It's a huge production, and now you got guys wired, one tap is a fastball or whatever the signals were.
Do you think, let me just ask you this, because three managers have lost their jobs in the last couple of days, and Carlos Beltran, because he was a player with the Astros, didn't even get a chance to manage the Mets. Do you think the Astros players should face some kind of suspension?
Yes,
for any of this
because
stuff?
That's again, we are so far beyond just. And I mean, you played baseball. I played baseball. We're so far beyond just the general basics of trying to steal something. Hey, we're playing Little League Baseball. Two's a curveball. One's a fastball. Hey, I think a fastball's coming.
Uh-huh.
We're so far beyond that in Major League Baseball right now with the technology, with the sophistication of it. It crosses the line to where it's not something – it's not part of the game anymore. Like, it's legitimately trying to impact and distort the outcome of the game with all this. Like, yeah. Jose Altuve's if Jose Altuve's wearing a wire
with a buzzer in it to
get the pitch, like I get the fact that, well, he still has to hit it. He knows a fastball is coming, but he still has to hit it. But just doing that's so far beyond the basics of the game, and you're cheating the game. You sit him for at least a year.
Well, and it's not just, well, he still has to hit it. It's also, if you know that Aroldis Chapman's slider is coming, and it starts off on the inner third of the plate, you know that it's going to break away from you. You know you're going to lay off that pitch rather than be fooled and think it's a fastball. There's a big difference. It's a major advantage for those guys.
How different is it, or how much is it the same of taking PEDs? Like, you're basically trying to do something to cheat the game. That's an obvious cheat of the game.
And it's amazing because really, at least initially anyway, baseball has come down a heck of a lot harder on this than they ever did initially regarding PEDs for anything that they ever did.
Well, I think they kind of know, like, we can't let this slide, you know.
Well, and it's, but they let PEDs slide for a long time. Everyone was willing to look the other way. And there's some stuff out there today that the Milwaukee Brewers and the Texas Rangers are both known for this stuff as well. And I said when it came out that it's not just one team that was doing it. And then the Red Sox got revealed, and now we're going to start to see more teams. I'm surprised that Jessica Mendoza, did you hear her comments?
I did.
Really?
Disappointing.
Yes. Very
like,
disappointing.
Like you have a chance in the platform that you have and the status that you have in the game to take a really good hard stand against this, and instead it's like, well, you know,
shouldn't have come out and said this publicly.
Well, you know what? He did.
Yeah.
And it's obviously been part of the game that people know about. It's like the baseball's dirty little secret.
But look, But, I mean, you can say the same thing about Jose Canseco, too, because he named names, mm-hmm. and when he initially did it, he was a pariah. But and I don't think he's quite seen in that same way. He's still Jose Canseco. He's still a little bit loopy. But in the end,
a little bit.
He turned out to be – he was right, you know.
Right.
All these people he was naming, and as widespread as he said it was, and everyone wanted to laugh and say, oh, it's Jose Canseco. But in the end, he turned out to be right, and Mike Fiers is obviously right as well.
And it's not an isolated incident. Like, no. How long has this been going on? And really, if you're a member of the Houston Astros – and you won a World Series with it, doing this? How do you like really? How do you sleep? How do you sleep at night? How do you go out in a ballpark and be like, hey, this cloud is going to be over Altuve, George Springer, whoever was on those teams, and they're going to have to answer that. Like, how do you distance yourself from that? The only way to do it now, if you're the Houston Astros, to be like, go out and win like 20 games in a row,
yeah,
and do it legit. Because how legit was it where they're stealing signs?
And apparently, during the World Series this year, Fox, because of all this, the word about this stuff was getting around, so Fox would not show, and I haven't obviously gone back and watched, they would not show the catcher dropping signs to the pitcher because of this. They avoided that. It was more, you know, just whether it was crowd shots, pitcher mm-hmm. shots, whoever, they wouldn't show the catcher actually dropping signs. And look who won the World Series, the Washington Nationals.
Nationals.
Beat the Astros. So interesting stuff. 6:18 on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. Tom Noy, Sean Stiers, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. I'll tell you what, Tom, let's go ahead because we always have a way of backing ourselves into a corner late in the show.
Always.
And we've got the Mike Bray Show coming up at 7 o'clock tonight. So let's go ahead. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, we'll talk about Notre Dame's win over Georgia Tech last night, 78-74, as well as get to some many questions that Tom Noy had from his IndyInsider.com basketball chat today. Sound good?
Absolutely. Hey, you're driving this ship. I'm just a co-pilot.
I'm trying.
I'm Roger Murdoch right now. You're captain over.
Right. Roger, Roger. 6:19. Back right after this. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, and the Sports Beat app. Mike Bray Show coming up 7 o'clock tonight at 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, with Tom Noy from the South Bend Tribune and IndyInsider.com, Sean Stiers, and a victory last night.
How about that?
In Atlanta, Notre Dame beats Georgia Tech 78-74. Prentice Hub, 25 points.
Big night. What's 20 in the second half.
I can't even call it a layup. Just kind of the way
he was throwing the ball up
there a couple times.
It's almost like a
I've never noticed that before.
It's like a push scoop shot.
Yeah.
And he throws it up just like his jumper. It goes really high, and it'll hit like the top of the backboard and fall through.
It's almost like kind of starting with your with your hand kind of crooked back and your hand by your shoulder and just almost like shot putting it up there.
Hey, when you're going for 25 points and 20 in the second half on the road,
that's right.
You can shoot it however you want, just as long as it's going in. Like he's been really good. And what I like about him, I talked about a lot of fans talked about it in the chat today. He's got some swagger to him, you know. And I think we're starting to see more of it. And I'm kind of glad about that because for the last year and a half, this program has been just so dull.
Swaggerless.
Very swaggerless. Just so anti-swagger.
I mean, since Farrell and Colson
have
been gone, essentially, you know, and there hasn't been any.
They always had guys that had, like, a ton of swagger. Torrey Jackson, Luke Herangode, Kyle McElarney, Ben Hansborough, I think, led the nation in swagger. You know, they just you mentioned Bonzi Colson and Matt Farrell, and they just had guys that, like, they're really good guys, but you want to see some of the energy and some of the stuff. Now, I know the technical that Prentice had in Syracuse was bad. Like, that's just not a good time to do that. But I kind of like just, you know, being – just showing that and being like, hey, we're here. We're not going to get pushed around, number one. And number two, the Syracuse game and this game last night against Georgia Tech, it's almost like the worse the fans get on him and the worse the other team just – tries to go at him,
the more he feeds on it.
Yeah, the more he delivers and he responds to that. And That's good to see that we've got two more years of that stuff with him.
Would have thought watching the game on ACC Network last night that we were watching, the Final Four or something based on the two. I don't know who the two announcers were. I can't think of their names.
How many times were we – and I tweeted
it. Heavyweight fight.
Like, yeah, it's a heavyweight fight. These two guys, teams are back and forth. It's a great game. It's a great game. And I'm in this – back and forth text chain with somebody that I won't name, but like eventually you gotta not say something just to say it. Like the play, like I'm being told, well, the play-by-play guy, he's just, you know, off the cuff and he's off the top of his head. Well, you don't say it. At that point in the game, the teams had combined to shoot 11 of 32 and they were 1 of 12, and the guy told me, this is a great basketball game.
Right.
You can't say that.
Right.
If you're an announcer.
Especially when you're saying it over and
right.
over and over
and
again.
And he keep telling us that it's such a great game and it's such a great game. And it really wasn't. Like, that's why I tweeted it out. I'm like, what am I missing? Like, this wasn't Notre Dame Kentucky in the Elite Eight or Notre Dame Butler in the Sweet 16.
Yeah. It was a close game.
It was
back and forth. It was far from an aesthetic game. There were a lot of stoppages down the stretch.
But a lot of bad shots, too.
Yeah.
Like Prentice Hubb, we talked about.
Yeah, and that's the thing. They both forced up
right.
shots. And like sometimes not even forced them up, had good looks, but just boom, Brick City.
And,
you know?
And Prentice would come down, and he'd shoot a three, and it would hit only the backboard.
Yeah.
And then Georgia Tech would come down, and they'd shoot, and it would be an air ball. And then Notre Dame would come down. So there were situations like that. Like, don't get me wrong. If you're a Notre Dame fan, I think some people on Twitter were mistaken. Like, how could you not love this game? It's a great game. Notre Dame won, and I'm like, well, it's great if you're a Notre Dame fan that they won, but it wasn't really easy on the eyes. Like Notre Dame, they were 8 of 26 from three, and it was kind of. But see, that's the way Georgia Tech. When you go into teams and play teams like Georgia Tech and Boston College, Clemson is another one. If Florida State, you just know it's not going to be easy. It's
yeah.
just going to be such a grind. And for long stretches, last night was, but you never would have known it because we were told by the announcers what a great game it was.
The two teams combined to shoot 12 for 41 on three-pointers.
That's not good.
No, not at all.
Not good.
No.
You know, and then we're told on TV from the announcers that Juwan Durham transferred from the University of Miami.
That's exactly right.
Do some homework.
Yeah. I mean, TV, you get the opportunity, as you said, you can lay out a little bit more. You can let the broadcast breathe
right.
a little bit more. You don't have to talk over everything, and I felt like that was something that got away from them.
It did.
Last night. All right, let's move on.
Let's talk
some Notre Dame basketball. You want to get to your
– Weren't we talking Notre Dame basketball?
Chat questions. Well, let's continue in a different direction.
Let's get to this great heavyweight chat. That I had today.
It was, man. How long did you go?
Only four.
4 hours?
Only 4 hours. Supposed to start it at 10. Usually, you know, knowing me, I'm ready to roll at like 9:45.
I was predicting somewhere around 2.5 based on the number of questions.
No, because it's a
you
win.
You will go. Like, do you order lunch and, you know, do you have food delivered to your desk?
Well,
you
I work from
chats?
Home.
Right. But so. You can still have food delivered to your desk.
No, I'm making my own lunch. Oh, no, actually, today I ate late because I knew I was going to be here from 6 to 7.
Okay.
So it's like I'll do the chat till about I think I cut the chat off at like 2:20 and then had a late lunch.
Okay.
But I mean when you get rolling, you just and that's why like I was driving here and I'm like, man, it's already dark out. Like what happened to today? Because you get up and you start this thing at 9:30 and before you know it, you look up, it's 1:30. Then you're eating lunch at 2:30. You got to format it for the web, and then you got to format it for print tomorrow. Then you look at the clock. It's like 5 after 5. I gotta get going.
Yeah,
I got. So, it's good when I have questions like that.
I gotta change my boxers and head to the station.
Like
now.
That, I gotta take a shower. Like it's good when and somebody said when they were down yesterday. Somebody's like, "Oh God, can you believe you got to do a chat tomorrow?" You know, what if they lose the game? Either way, like it's good to get the instant reaction, like coming off 24 hours less than a game,
yeah.
less than 24 hours after a game. People are still worked up about
got an emotion one way or the other.
Yeah, worked up about oh look at how great Prentice Hubb and T.J. Gibbs were, and what are they going to do about Rex Pflugar, and why doesn't Juwan Durham play more? So
is Mike Bray in the hot seat?
Not NFL.
All that
good stuff.
Over and over and over again.
All right, what do you got?
Phil from Basking Ridge asks, first he says, great win last night.
Of course.
Have to give props to Hub since Syracuse. You were right, you being you. Question, how long has it been since ND had all 13 scholarships filled and why? Can understand leaving one or two open sometimes, but it seems like years since they've had any depth.
It has been years, and that's the way Mike Bray wants it. Like, Mike Bray does not want to carry a full complement of 13 players because those are 13 individuals that you have to try to keep happy, juggling playing time and roles and meetings and the occasional phone call from a parent. How come this guy's not doing this? He should be playing more. That other guy should be, less for Mike Bray, and that's the way Duke does it. Like, he comes from the Mike Krzyzewski school of scholarship management to where don't carry a maximum 13 guys because that's just more guys you have to try to keep happy. The less guys you use, especially when you have a tight rotation, you don't need 13 guys.
Yeah, I mean, he's kept a smaller group, and still guys have decided to transfer.
Yeah, and see, that's how he's gotten caught in it is – well, they were caught by surprise by Elijah Burns, transferring four games. You know, what team captain transfers four games into a season? That just doesn't happen. They were kind of surprised by Chris Doherty, not really, but a little bit, that he leaves. DJ Harvey, that was something that went sideways earlier. But then when you lose like Robbie Carmody, like, and if they had Robbie Carmody, all the concerns and the questions and the comments about the short rotation, I don't think happen because the rotation is balanced out a little bit more. But when you lose Robbie Carmody more so than you lose Chris Doherty.
Yeah.
Like, there are people that make comments at the end of my stories on Indy Insider almost every time they lose. They would have been a lot better if Chris Doherty, like, he's Chris Doherty's PR guy or something. What did Chris Doherty ever show here that gave anybody any indication that he was ready to play in the ACC? Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. So, yeah, Mike Bray does not like using the whole allotment of 13 scholarships.
Yep.
Ever.
Liam from London. When TJ Gibbs held his knee in the fourth quarter and with Rex limping at times, I thought this team is one knee injury or high ankle sprain from complete catastrophe. Besides Elijah Taylor and Matt Zona, are there any other likely new arrivals coming in next year? Grad transfers who want to do an MBA at the Mendoza?
Not right now, but they'll add somebody. They may, I've kind of projected, maybe they add two grad transfers. Maybe they get a grad transfer, a late rising senior, and a traditional transfer. Just to boost those numbers, because when you lose John Mooney, TJ Gibbs, and Rex Pflugar, that's a lot of leadership and experience walking out the door. You've got to really try to stay older next year. You're going to have Nate Krzyzewski and Dane Goodwin, Prentice Hubb, and then, but you don't know, like, Robbie Carmody, what's he going to be like psychologically after two season-ending injuries his first two seasons? Juwan Durham, you don't know. You just don't know if the light bulb is going to come on for him to where he can be a major low-post presence in the mode of John Mooney playing 34 minutes a game. So, and you get Cormac Ryan, he'll bring something. But I think you've got to look at how you can max it out. Not get to 13 scholarships next year, but get to 11 or 12 guys. So at least if something like that, something goofy happens, like Carmody busting up his knee going up for a dunk against Maryland, something goofy like that happens, at least you've got some backup next season.
It is 6:34. He's Tom Noy. I'm Sean Stiers talking some Notre Dame basketball on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Let's take a timeout. When we come back, we'll get more questions from Tom Noy's IndyInsider.com basketball chat today with the Mike Bray Show coming up in 26 minutes. 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader in the Sports Beat app. Budweiser's weekday sports beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader in the Sports Beat app. We got the Mike Bray Show coming up at 7 o'clock. Tom Noy from the South Bend Tribune and IndyInsider.com. Sean Stiers taking you through the second hour of Budweiser's weekday sports beat. We'll be back again together tomorrow.
Yes, we will.
Sitting in these same seats. Okay, let's continue with some questions from your IndyInsider.com chat from earlier today. Ralph from Glencoe, Illinois. A couple of weeks ago, I used to yell, "No!" every time Prentice Hubbs shot the ball from three. Can his rainbow shot really be consistent long-term? He will lose his court awareness and make silly turnovers at times, and his technical at Syracuse was bemusing. Then, all of a sudden, right after that technical, the rainbow shot started falling, and he seems to be a different person offensively. Still hasn't done, always seemed to be aware of the court he needs to as a point guard. The question, in your opinion, which is the real Prentice Hubb?
I think what we saw last night and what we saw, like everything that we're getting from Prentice Hubb, where he's going to take some really questionable shots at times, but then at other times, like we saw in the second half, he can carry this team and be like, all right, I'm going to make this shot. I think he had 10 in a row at one point to where if John Mooney's not being able to do whatever he can do down low or TJ Gibbs. Like Gibbs, I think Gibbs and Hubb are finally figuring out how they can play with one another and play off one another. And Hubb is figuring out, I can be a pretty good lead guard in this league. Like, as disastrous as what last season was, I think the one thing everybody lost on that and failed to see was they had a really good guard in Prentice Hubb. Like, that was the guy with what he was asked to do as a freshman and then what he did, assist-to-turnover ratio, minutes-wise. He didn't shoot it as well, but you look at his percentages right now where he's shooting 41% from the field, 37% from three, but that's come up. I think the one area of his game that I still want to see get better, if you're going to be that type of a point guard, he's only shooting 62% from the foul line. But he's averaging 13 points a game. He's got 85 assists to 41 turnovers.
5 of 6 in crunch time last night.
Yeah.
So at least he was on in that situation.
And we talked about the swagger. I think the guys are now are figuring out how they can play with Prentice Hubb when Prentice has that swagger going for him. Like, it's contagious. And we saw that late in the second half where Gibbs played a little freer, Mooney played freer, Goodwin was in there. And a lot of it is Prentice Hubb. Like, the question was all the things that he does. You're a point guard in the ACC. You're going to be asked to carry a really heavy load and deliver. And for the most part, I think Prentice Hubb's doing that.
Yep, I completely agree with that. R-Jam asks, I see Nate Leshefsky playing hard, mixing it up down low, but his offensive contributions are below expectations. Has this just been an extended slump, or does he not fit with the flow of this offense?
I think he just doesn't understand where he can fit in college basketball yet. Like, it takes time for a guy to figure it out because I kind of lump Nate Leshefsky and Juwan Durham into it, to where they're so big in high school that the game comes easily to them, where they're playing against competition, where there aren't guys that are 6'9 that can get out and close out on Nate Leshefsky in high school, and they can do that now in college basketball. So now how do you change your game? How do you elevate your game? How do you adjust to where you can still be as effective as you were in high school? We saw Dane Goodwin go through that last year. I think he's kind of figured it out to where, all right, now I know where I can go and get 12 points a game in this offense. Nate Leshefsky, he's got to be the next guy. First it was Prentice Hubb. He did it most of the time last year. He's doing it most of the time this year. Then it was Dane Goodwin. He's kind of figured it out. Now it's got to be Nate Leshefsky. Get him up to speed to where he can give you double figures a night.
I'm going to ask you a question on the fly here. Eric asked me in the first hour of the show, where do you think this Notre Dame team can end up at the end of the season? Because he was telling me about, and I don't know if maybe you saw this, there was, I think it was Wes Durham, maybe did his ranking of the ACC, and he has Notre Dame 15th right now, which is where North Carolina is actually sitting, amazingly.
Well, he had Wes Durham, and I tweeted this, like, come on. Like, I understand the ACC bias, everything. Like, we saw that when Jaren Grant was supposed to be ACC Player of the Year, and they gave it to Jahlil Okafor because you can't give a Notre Dame guy over a Duke guy in the ACC. Like, Wake Forest, North Carolina, and Notre Dame all had the same league record before last night's game. They're all 1-4. But he ranked Wes Durham, who happens to work for the ACC Network, he ranked Carolina and Wake ahead of Notre Dame because, well, God forbid you put a Carolina school 15th in the ACC. Yeah. That's just blasphemy. So where do they end up? I still have no idea. And you know, I'm getting emails about should we be excited about this team? Should we be as the beat writer columnist, are you encouraged about this team? And it's still too early to say. Like, that was a big step for them to get over last night in being able to do that and do it on the road to where you can close out a close game. And for the first time, I didn't feel it against Louisville. I didn't feel it against Boston College or NC State. But last night was the first time where he kind of figured, I don't think they're going to let this one slip away.
Yeah, and that's – I still – that letting that NC State game slip away, you know, again, I don't know how big a factor that's going to be, but just when you look at right now the way the ACC is shaping up, if they win that game, they're 3-3 in the ACC with all the wins being on the road so far, and they would also be in a four-way tie for fifth place in the conference.
Well, right, that NC State game and the Boston College game. Like the Boston College game, you can't at this point in where the program is, you can't be like that and feel sorry for yourselves because you got blown out at Maryland and you lost Robbie Carmody to the knee injury earlier in the week. You got to go win that home game. So I don't know, like, it's still until they can start stringing together like in previous seasons, like the Elite 8 years, even the years they went to the NCAA tournament. One a win like this, they could piggyback and run off 2, 3, 4 wins in a row.
Mm-hmm.
If they can do that, then maybe you can realistically start thinking about the NCAA tournament. But with this team and this core of players, it's always been one step forward and one step back. Like all the high of winning at Georgia Tech. Now what happens? You come home and you lay an egg against Syracuse. Then you have to go back on the road against a top 10 team in Florida State. So it's something like, yeah, this was a great win, but now you've got to build on it and say, let's pick off a few more. Let's get Syracuse. Let's find a way to win at Florida State. And then I think the program will start generating some real momentum as to maybe they can get to double-digit wins.
Time out. More Notre Dame basketball questions with Tom Noe coming up in the Mike Bray Show at 7 o'clock with Jack Nolan and Mike Bray on 96.1 WSBT. Budweiser's weekday sports beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader in the Sports Beat app. We're brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. By the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger's a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. And by Lechleitner Door Sales and Service at Lechleitner. They open all the right doors. With Tom Noe, the South Bend Tribune, and IndianSetter.com, Sean Stiers. Tom, we were talking about the basketball broadcast last night. I'll ask something a little more general that came from your chat today regarding TV. Ralph from Glencoe, not having the ACC network on cable to watch these games has really been frustrating. Not that you're a TV mogul or anything.
Yeah, but or newspaper mogul.
Yeah, but do you hear about any momentum with the ACC network getting into the Notre Dame area, Northern Indiana, Chicago a little bit more?
And I said, it is in the Northern Indiana. It just
we actually
happens.
Have it now.
Yeah, we have it. It depends. Like the ACC network was nowhere to be found when football season started in the fall.
Yep.
And I went down to Louisville for the Notre Dame football home opener and was talking with Louisville's SID for basketball, and we were talking about, like, what are you hearing about the ACC network? Like, we can't get that anywhere in Northern Indiana. And he was saying his cable company, they thought that, like, by the middle of the fall, they would be able to pick it up. It's the same cable company that we have here and that I have.
And that I have as well.
And that you have. So by middle fall, they said, sit tight. I think something's coming down the pike. And sure enough, like 3 weeks, 4 weeks later, boom, ACC Network appears. So
we got it right before the Notre Dame-Duke game, a couple weeks before.
Before the football game, yeah.
Magically.
Magically appears. But it is offered in Northern Indiana. And I told the guy from Chicago, the thing that he's going through now with the ACC Network, that might be the same thing people around here are going to be going through when Marquee starts with the whole Cubs network.
Good point.
Like
we really haven't heard who's distributing that yet.
And there have been stories in the Chicago Tribune every once in a while, occasionally, where they say, okay, it's almost mid-January and Marquee still does not have a plan.
Mm-hmm.
It was mid-November, mid-December. Now it's mid-January. Nobody knows what Marquee's doing. There are Cub fans here in northern Indiana. They may not be able to watch the Chicago Cubs. And from someone who grew up watching WGN every day, coming home from school at 3:15 and knowing that the Cubs were on WGN, I just find that staggering to where the Cubs may not be on to a big chunk of their fan base in northern Indiana.
There's just a lot of volatility with cable TV right now. Because, I mean, understandably so, you've got customers who are frustrated because of rising prices. And for every channel that gets put onto, you know, whether it's UVerse, DirecTV, Comcast, whatever it happens to be, those the cable conglomerates have to pay that channel X amount per subscriber to carry it. And then, of course, they've got to pass the cost along. We both have the same, as you said, cable. We subscribe to the same cable provider. We don't have NFL Network. That was lost after last year. That's frustrating to me.
But
right
we
now.
Still have the Longhorn Network.
Yeah, we still have the Longhorn
for
Network.
How,
for how,
what,
six
reason. People?
Exactly.
Like you have to kind of balance that
it's
out.
It's not even the Big 12 Network. It's the Longhorn Network.
It's just Texas. It's Texas football, Texas athletics 24/7. And you have to balance that out and say, are more cable subscribers interested in watching the Longhorn Network or watching Notre Dame and the ACC Network or the Chicago Cubs and Marquee? Like, I don't think there's any decision. It's not rocket science trying to figure that out.
The Dan Patrick Show, which, of course, we air every weekday from 10 to 1, but it is also the two, UVerse and DirecTV, they're leaving. I think it's at the end of this month that agreement is going to end. It'll no longer be on that audience channel that AT&T, UVerse, and DirecTV have. So, like I said, there's just a lot of volatility up and down. All over the place, unfortunately. Okay, let me see. A few.
What else you got?
Dylan from Minnesota. Have you seen what Toledo has done since the overtime?
You
got to
get a Toledo Rocket question in,
though. Oh, my goodness. He says, yikes. It's where my son's finishing grad school, so I guess I'll get the Toledo.
Yeah, ask your son. What's going on with the Rockets?
What's going on with the Rockets? Yeah, they're around 500 in match
nine
play.
And
we all thought they were going to be really good.
Yeah, and Mike Bray, and that always seems to be that way where they get a team that's like a year late or they've run out of steam a year late where, oh, watch out for this team. They got a chance to win the MAC. They may do this. They may do that. Toledo's 9-8. They lost 5 in a row in like 6 of the last 7. They're losing to Central Michigan. They lost to University of Kansas City. So that's why
MKC baby, the running ruse.
Yeah, the kangaroos. And we talked about it earlier, touched on it a little bit earlier in the show where, you know, what's next for this Notre Dame team or what do they need to do to get into the NCAA tournament discussion? I think it's going to be really hard this year because normally 10-10 will get you into the NCAA tournament discussion. You go 10-10 in a league like the ACC, but the ACC's down number 1 and number 2. That non-conference resume is really, really thin for Notre Dame right now where you can't point to one game. Maybe UCLA, depending on what they do the rest of the way. I know they had a big win at Washington recently in Pac-12 play. But Indiana game you let go, Maryland game you couldn't get. And then there's, like, who did you really beat between non-conference and conference play?
Last question for tonight from Andrew from Plymouth. Why haven't we seen Robbie Kermody on the bench at home games?
That's an odd one. Like, where's Robbie Kermody? Yeah. I think he's still so early in his rehab process. Like, I see him around Rolfs Hall every time we go in there for media access, and it's still hard for him to kind of maneuver around. He has the full-length leg brace. He's got the crutches. He's on a scooter, and he's got to back the scooter up before he can get it out the door at Rolfs Hall. So it's still a little clunky and awkward in his post-surgery condition right now. I think give him a couple more weeks to where maybe he can use a walking brace or something. He'll be back. And you don't want a guy that's just had reconstructive knee surgery be anywhere near a basketball court where someone's going
to
go
get
diving
out of the way of it. Yeah.
Because was somebody dives for a loose ball, they're not thinking, hey, that Carmody kid, he just had major knee surgery. The guy's trying to save the ball. What if he runs into Robbie Kermody? So it's better to keep him in the background now.
Got it.
That's it?
Got it.
Got it. Yeah, I see what you did there.
All right. All right. We've got the Mike Bray Show coming up in minutes here on 96.1 WSBT. Tom Noy, a pleasure as always. We will address more Notre Dame basketball questions on tomorrow's show, Hour 2. We might have a guest in Hour 2 tomorrow as well. We'll just kind of tease that a little bit. That's kind of pending. We'll see what happens.
Big tease.
All right, Tom Noy, I will talk to you tomorrow. As I said, we've got the Mike Bray Show on the way. I'll be back in tomorrow. Darren Pritchett will join us for a little bit of the first hour from Ohio State, getting ready for some Notre Dame hockey. Mike Bray Show on the way, 96.1 WSBT South Bend, the sports leader.